You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Emprise Bank. Coming up, the latest episode of 3Maw.
All right, welcome to another 3Maw Pod. I am your host today, Cole Manbeck, joined as always by publisher and editor at K-State Online on the On3 Network, Derek Young, and we are here to talk some more K-State basketball as the Wildcats take on Cincinnati on the road on Saturday with, I believe that's a 6 p.m. tip, right, D.Y.? So you're going, you're making the trip.
We're making the trip to Fifth Third Arena. It's a 6 o'clock game. I will say, I plan on making the trip. We've applied for credentials. Still haven't heard back, so I might have to check on that. It's already Thursday.
You're an Ohio guy. Have you been to games at Cincinnati at that current arena before?
Is it the same one as it was like in the early 2000s?
I assume so. I prefaced it that way because I thought you might know. But
the last Cincinnati Bearcats basketball game, home game that I went to, Bob Huggins was still the coach. Because when I grew up, Bob Huggins was the coach in Cincinnati, and they were awesome. I wouldn't watch Kenyon Martin play.
Yeah. We actually, old memory, we had a TV wheeled into the room at I was in grade school when Kenyon Martin was playing, D.Y., and his knee injury occurred. They had the TV on when he suffered that knee injury. So,
yeah.
I remember that.
Trying to think of some other guys that I remember going to watch for those Cincinnati teams. I think they had Steve Logan, a really good guard that could shoot the lights out as well. They had more than those two. I don't know why I'm blanking on anyone else. Also, around the same time period that I, you know, a few years after, obviously, probably 5 years after or so, but that's when a high school in Cincinnati called North College Hill at O.J. Mayo and Bill Walker.
Yeah. Remember those days. K-State fans will remember them very fondly as well. I was constantly checking the recruiting rankings and recruiting updates, you know, with all of the hype going around with K-State recruiting top 10, top 15 talent.
We played against them. It didn't go well, but we played.
no surprise. Anyways, as always, forgot to shout out our guys at the Holiday Distillery. Go get stocked up on your Ben Holiday bottled and bond bourbon for the weekend and for March Madness. As it is just right around the corner, you got the NCAA tournament. Some of you might want to take some PTO. Get some Ben Holiday Bottled and Bond Bourbon or 360 Vodka, make a few drinks, enjoy some NCAA tournament action. If you're a K-State fan, you're hoping the Wildcats are in the field, and you might need that as they tip off with the nerves of win or go home in the NCAA tournament. But I think we'll all be thrilled if the Wildcats are dancing in March. So a large part of that's going to be what happens on the court on Saturday in Cincinnati. D.Y., as the Wildcats look to get to back to 500 in league play. They sit at 7-8. In the Big 12 standings, they're tied for eighth right now with Texas and Oklahoma. Oklahoma fell by 13 in Ames last night to Iowa State. Texas pulled off they were 4-point dogs, and they just destroyed Texas and Lubbock in front of a raucous crowd on Tuesday night. So Texas now is also tied with the Wildcats, 7-8 in the league standings. BYU won at Kansas. It's been a wacky week. We thought BYU would probably lose that game and be tied in a four-way tie with Kansas State for seventh in the league. But the Wildcats sit tied for eighth. They're currently wouldn't play on the first opening round of Tuesday of the Big 12 tournament as things sit today. This is a game not so much just for the Big 12 standings, but for the NCAA tournament resume, D.Y., because Cincinnati is 45th in the net. You have to be a top 75 team in the net to be a quad one victory when playing on the road. Obviously, this would be easily a quad one win for the Wildcats if they were to pull it off. It would give K-State their fourth quad one win and their eighth quad one and quad two win combined as they try to stack some of those higher end wins for their NCAA tournament profile. Just what's the significance of this game in your eyes?
It's almost just like about every game left, right? Feels must win territory. Now you could survive if you lose at Cincinnati but win at Kansas. But I think you want to be realistic, right, in terms of which one is more doable. You would you would think that winning at Cincinnati is much more doable than winning at KU. So that's where my head goes. So it feels like it's tough to find an NCAA tournament path without winning at Cincinnati. Because do you really want to have your backs against the wall and be in a must-win spot when you have to play Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse, despite losing to BYU at home? I mean, they don't lose at home. And certainly they're not going to want to lose that game at home because they did just lose to BYU at home. Kevin McCullough or not, that's a tough task, a tough ask. So important significance. It's going to be hard for Kansas State to make the field of 68 without a win at Cincinnati.
Well, we could have Nick, our producer, who's a KU guy. He could maybe track down or has the numbers on the last time KU's lost back-to-back home games in Allen Fieldhouse, which is what it would take for Kansas State to win. And also, maybe Nick, while you're at it in the research department over there, the last time KU lost on senior night at home, feels like they win that game every single year in hand.
And you'll know this one. When's the last time they lost a home to K-State in general, right?
That would be the Drummond Diarra, Clint Stewart, Jim Walters team, and back in the 05-06 season, because I was watching it in Goodnow Hall in my dorm when that occurred. And man, was that quite the shock. I was a freshman at Kansas State, so it was so
winning at Kansas would be bucking some unreal trends that have kind of went on. It would have to happen for Kansas State to win that game. So like I said, like, this one just seems like you have a lot of weight off your shoulders, and you're playing with a little bit of house money when you play at Kansas if you are able to take down Cincinnati into third arena.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you, you know, I don't want to say like margin for error, but you need
on the road maybe, but if you lose at Kansas, then you're back to no margin for error, and you got to beat Iowa State at home.
I think. So tell me what you think of this, and we'll dive into the specifics of the Cincinnati matchup here in a moment, but let's just set the stage for this game and what it means for the Wildcats. So I think if K-State goes 3-2 the remainder of the season, they're guaranteed four more games as of today, right? And I'm saying if they win a game in Kansas City and then they lose in their second game in KC, right? It goes 3-2. I think they're in the NCAA tournament for sure.
Three and two.
That puts him at 20. And so let's set a set.
You're probably right.
Because that's three more. They have three quad one wins today. DY, six.
Yeah, as long as that third win is not on Tuesday, because I don't think you get a quad one win on Tuesday.
Right.
I doubt Kansas State's. Kansas State's probably not on Tuesday if they win two of their final three. So
that's right.
It's null and void probably. But I just wanted to identify and make that clear. Like, if you win on Tuesday, it doesn't really do you any good.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. I mean, it would just be a don't hurt yourself game, you know, because all you could do is hurt yourself in that one. Now, it might be a quad two win, which isn't the worst thing in the world if you played on Tuesday, but look, if you're playing on Tuesday, that means you probably dropped at least two of these final three games, potentially all three, to play on Tuesday night at this point. So I'm just going to pull up the league standings once again, because UCF is actually close to K-State. UCF won at Oklahoma State last night. UCF's in 11th. K-State is in that tie for 8th, but UCF is 6-9. K-State's 7-8, and then I'm looking at...
I imagine if K-State goes 2-1, they're not playing on Tuesday.
Yeah, and you look at, so UCF is the team with the biggest threat to catch K-State at this point. I guess you could argue if Cincinnati beat K-State, they'd be close to. But UCF closes the season with home games against Iowa State, Houston, and then goes to TCU. So they're going to have to really fight and claw to get a win or two down the stretch. If you play on Wednesday night, that's good. Oh, go ahead.
You kind of spelled it out, to be honest, because you really don't want to have to play on Tuesday if you're Kansas State. Just get out of that whole thing in general, because, like you said, it can't help you, but it has the potential to hurt you, because you could be playing number 14, which might not be even quad two. Because what if you're 11? And you kind of spelled it out there. Like, I get that you only need to get one of these two road games probably, as long as you beat Iowa State at home and maybe get a win in Kansas City. But beating Cincinnati can almost ensure you don't have to play on Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. Yeah, it'd pretty much lock you out of that. And then if you played on Wednesday, that matchup is going to be a quad one, because you're looking at teams like Oklahoma on a neutral court.
And I know that there's a few quad one teams that you could play on Wednesday that makes you feel okay. Like, I know folks have mentioned TCU, even Cincinnati, if you can finally find some way to get that, but it's probably not doable for Kansas State at this point. But, like, I remember a handful of days ago when the Big 12 puts out, if the season ended today, this is the bracket, and Kansas State's Wednesday matchup was Oklahoma, and I would love that.
Yeah, I'd like that. I also think, so Oklahoma's 42 in the net. They got to stay top 50 to be quad one on the neutral court. But I also think DY playing BYU would be really enticing, because the metrics love them so much. They are 10th in the net currently. So if you beat BYU on a neutral court, that would lift your resume even higher, give you another much higher profile quad one. That would really help K-State, I would think. But it'd be a hard game. Obviously, BYU can get hot. We saw what they were able to do at Kansas. Although,
that game notwithstanding, BYU's been pretty rough away from the Marriotts.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, I say 3-2 down the stretch. I think they're in the NCAA tournament. Now, if they go 2-1 down in these last three regular season games, that means they probably win at Cincinnati Saturday and they win against Iowa State. That gives them 5 quad one wins. And then they have 9 quad one and quad two wins combined. Then it just, if they lose in the opening round, they play in the Big 12 tournament, they're going to be sitting there on the edge, just, you know, it's going to be a coin flip. They'd be at best probably in the play-in game in Dayton if they got in.
Even winning 2 of the final 3 and losing on Wednesday in Kansas City without playing on Tuesday, even then they got a little bit of it there where you can kind of squint and see it, because some of these other – because that would still include 2 more quad one wins, obviously, is what we're talking about here. And that would give K-State 5 quad one wins in general, with 3 of them being very, very high of Kansas, Baylor, and BYU, because sometimes they look at it as a quad 1A, quad 1B, and you split that in half, and you know, their quad one wins are actually in the top half. So they'll still be right there, because the teams that they're battling with on the bubble, for the most part, just don't have the opportunity still in front of them that Kansas State does. Like, they have a harder time unless they really go and make deep, deep conference tournament runs to where they're playing really good quad one games and winning those. They just don't have the chances that Kansas State does. Like, Kansas State's, I guess what I'm trying to say is, Kansas State's room for growth is much more significant than nearly every other bubble team facing the same task. And if you're Kansas State, that's what you have in your favor. And that's why you see Joe Lenardi's of the world, Jerry Palm's of the world, putting Kansas State squarely on the bubble now, that next 4 out, probably because they realize how much more damage that they can do, how much more that they can grow. It'll be interesting because, I mean, I've said this for a while now, I think almost a week or two ago, and it still is still true to this day, is Oklahoma, right? That's going to be an interesting case study because their metrics are amazing. But in general, in terms of what they've actually done, is pretty minimal. Yes, they sit there at 7-8 in the Big 12, just like K-State, but they've actually have not had the impressive wins that Kansas State has had. They haven't beat 3 top 10, 3 top 15 teams, right? So that's what's interesting to me, is how the committee will treat Oklahoma when they're all metrics and no real bang to the buck there. I looked at it since January 6th. We're talking almost 2 months. Oklahoma has only defeated 1 surefire NCAA tournament team.
Well, you know, the metrics are all very interesting. And you look at the net, because you look at a Wake Forest, right? They're 27th in the net, but they have 1 quad one win. You look at Gonzaga, that Gonzaga is currently, you know, a lot of people have them as like one of the last teams, and Gonzaga is 21 in the net, but they've won one quad one win and they have three quad one and quad two games combined. It's and yet K-State sits here at 73rd in the net. They're going to have to move up in their profile to get in. But I think if they're in the mid-60s, they'll get in, you know, potentially with that profile, as long as they rack up the quad ones, which they do. Their net profile ranking will increase.
On the flip side, the Big 12 does. And people are right to call out the Big 12 a little bit for manipulating it. The Big 12 is the best conference still, in my opinion. But they have some teams that are fraudulently up higher in the net, which helps with the quad one stuff, quad two stuff as well. And that's fair to point out by the people that are doing it.
I got to say, I'm so your point that you made, we'll go to a break here in just a moment, but to your point that you made about opportunities in the Big 12 to win quad ones and other teams not having it, I was listening to a bracketology episode on Field of 68 last night before I went to bed, and the guy on there was talking about St. John's, and he said, well, St. John's needs more high-end wins, but their last two games are against DePaul and Georgetown. So those are some of the worst teams in the country, worst power sixes, and so they're not going to get anything out of that other than if you blow them out, you can potentially move up some in the metrics. Although I will say, St. John's wasn't even close to making the field in Lenardi's projection as of yesterday. They were like the 12th team out. But I just checked. I mean, they got nine quad one and quad twos. So it's a bit surprising to me, to be honest. They're 17 and 12 overall. We don't have to dive into team-by-team breakdown. We'll go to break first to tell you about our friends at Home Field Apparel. We'll come back and do some more bracketology talk and break down Cincinnati on Saturday. But as always, you got to get stocked up on your Home Field Apparel gear. Home Field, great friends and supporters of the show, and great supporters of Kansas State. They've got over 40 K-State items on their website. Go check them out. K-State lavender bomber jacket, hoodies, you know, retro t-shirts, you name it. They've got it. Tons of cool designs and logos on their shirts and gear. It's super comfortable and soft, very comfortable. I've said it before, some of their hoodies are some of the most comfortable that I have. Love them. Get stocked up for the NCAA tournament here in March Madness and for football season. That's going to be just around the corner before you know it. So go to homefieldapparel.com, score 15% off on checkout with the discount code 3MAW23. We'll be back to talk K-State hoops and a little more bracketology and the Cincinnati game on Saturday when we come back from break.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, Nick's Ringer Research Department has come through and says it looks like the last time KU lost back-to-back home games was 1989. So,
yeah, that's the year I was born.
So that isn't exactly the most promising thing in the world. Thanks to Nick for pulling that for us. So, all right, so just a little bit more discussion. DY, I saw last night. And look, there's a lot of different projections out there. I don't think Lenardi is the only show in town anymore. There's plenty of guys that have lots of great thoughts on bracketology. But he had K-State in a graphic he tweeted out around 8 p.m. last night on Wednesday night as the eighth team out of the field. However, three of the teams in front of them that were in the last four or first four out and next four out lost last night. Texas A&M lost their fifth in a row. They lost at home against South Carolina in a game that they really needed to have. Butler got their doors blown off by Creighton, I believe. Let's see. St. John's. I'm just going to pull up the Big East real quick and make sure I get the scores right because there were a couple big ones. St. John's won at Butler 82-59 last night. That's going to be really harmful to Butler, who was in front of K-State, just in front. And Creighton defeated Seton Hall by 21. And Seton Hall was another team just in front of K-State. In Lenardi's projection, Virginia squeaked out a win. They're a bubble team. They squeaked out a win at Boston College. So K-State will probably be like the fifth or the sixth team out when you look at Lenardi's updated projections coming out in the next 12 hours. By the time you're listening to it, you may have already seen it. Colorado won against Cal last night. That's a bubble team. Just looking, Wichita State, man, huge win against 18-9 UAB. Helping K-State's profile. They get their 12th win of the year as they've really struggled. So, you know, Ole Miss lost by 15 against Alabama at home, and Ole Miss is another bubble team. Well, Nick says KU actually lost three in a row in 1989 at home. So just, what is that, 34 years ago? So, yeah.
34.
Yeah. So, anyways, we wanted to set the stage.
35. Man. 35. I'll be 35 in May. So,
yeah. We wanted to set the stage for you for just the significance of this game and really the last 10 days of the season. If K-State wins at Cincinnati, they lose to KU, and then they beat Iowa State at home again, it's going to be very hard to do. But if they did that, as the regular season concluded, they're probably sitting as like one of the last teams in. But then you have to rely on what happens around you, bid Steelers. You know, from other leagues that already are going to have a team make it as an at-large, and then somebody steals a bid that's not going to get in. That's where you then have to worry. So that's why it'd be best interest of Kansas State to take care of some business in Kansas City as well, if they're able to go 2-1 down the stretch here and get to 9-9 in the Big 12. All right. So all that being said, let's talk Cincinnati. DY, Cincinnati's a team that's 2-5 at home. They're 5-10 in the Big 12, but I mentioned earlier the metrics like them. They're 45th in the net. They're 16-12 overall. They gave Houston a bit of a fight on the road in Houston on Tuesday night. It looked at one point like Houston was really going to pull away. They got up by 16 or 17 in the second half, but Cincinnati clawed back, made it a 6-point game late. They lose by 8, 67-59, but I believe that's the closest any team had played Houston at home all season. They had beaten every team, I believe, by 15 or more on the entire season. I'm pulling up their profile real quick to make sure. Actually, so I said that Iowa State just the week prior lost by 8 to Houston. So Houston and or Iowa State and Cincinnati are the two that have played them the closest in Houston this year. So, you know, impressive that they were able to do that. They hung with KU and Allen Fieldhouse. They lost by 5 or 6 there. They went on the road and won at BYU. They went on the road and won at Texas Tech. They won at UCF, who's been really hard to beat actually at home. So they've been there in some close call situations with some really good teams, but they're 2-5 at home. And to me, this feels like a team, a matchup of two teams that are kind of similar in a lot of ways in terms of it's going to be a grinded out, knock it out, good defensive game, not great offensive play from either side. What do you make of this matchup?
I agree. Both teams are equipped that they have to be rugged to be effective and successful this year. That's where, and Cincinnati's kind of had that rugged theme, style, reputation since Wes Miller's been there. They're tough. They're a tough team, kind of gritty, working on the talent acquisition and improving the roster. And that department, not quite there yet. Do have some nice pieces still. But two teams, you know, that Houston game notwithstanding, two teams, in my opinion, kind of trending in two different directions. Again, that Houston game notwithstanding for Cincinnati, a little bit in free fall mode compared to what they were at one time in the Big 12. They're still competitive and fighting, but they're not getting some of the same results that they were earlier in conference action. Now, for Kansas State, the second half against West Virginia notwithstanding, I feel like they're starting to play a little bit. They're more consistently strong brand of basketball than what, you know, they had been doing in the stretch where they lost 7 of 8 games. So I know you have to squint a little bit and you have to take out a half here for Kansas State and maybe a game or a half here for Cincinnati, but it just feels like two teams trending in opposite directions.
Now, to that point, Cincinnati's lost 5 of their last 6 games. You have to wonder where they fought against Houston, but I wonder where their mindset is now that they're 5-10 in the league. I mean, it's hard for them to
get it, but I just, the way the DNA of and the fabric of what Wes Miller has there, I don't think that part is ever going to disappear. I think that's kind of been ingrained into what they do.
Yeah.
I don't think they check out.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at Cincinnati's. So they are, you know, at one point they were thought to be right on the edge of making the NCAA tournament. Yeah. They're 3-8 in quad ones and 2-2 in quad two.
A week and a half ago, I think they were on the first four out. So yeah. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. I'm just looking, you know, K-State, obviously, I mentioned earlier, K-State's 3-5 in quad one games and 4-5 in quad twos. They have one quad three loss, and I have any quad fours. Now, what I will say, D.Y., USC is 102 in the net. They got Isaiah Collier back. They're playing a little bit better, and USC was a neutral court game. So if USC gets into the top 100 of the net, that quad three loss goes away. In case they won't have a quad three or quad four loss, now that is assuming Miami doesn't completely tank down the stretch because they sit at around 90 in the net. That was a neutral court loss. They can't fall below 100 either.
And at this point, considering what's happened the last week, I don't think Providence and Villanova just get enough left there to get where they need to go to creep up into the quad one territory. It got close a few times, tiered a few times. I would be surprised if those both didn't stay quad two. It'd be night. Look, K-State were to luck out and one of those just get absolutely hot and somehow become a quad one win. And Kansas State, that margin for error decreases even more, right? Or increases, I guess I should say. But I don't think it's going to happen. But if it did, I mean, Kansas State, it's hard to keep out if they do what they need to do.
Well, I will say, D.Y., that there's a very good chance, actually, Villanova could make it into quad one status. So Villanova, as of today, is 32 in the net. They got to make it to the top 30. So they blew out Georgetown earlier this week, and that led to them jumping from 38 to 34 in the net. They moved up two more spots last night for whatever reason. I don't know what it was, teams in front of them losing. They're at 32. They got to make it 30 or better to be quad one. Now, Villanova.
Well, then it's funny because then you got to root for Villanova on Saturday at Providence.
Which I would do if I'm a K-State fan. It's also better. You don't want both of those teams making the tournament at this point because they're both bubble teams. You don't want them stealing a spot from Kansas.
Yeah, no, and that's true. And Providence, put it this way, Providence can't do enough to get into quad one because even if they did beat Villanova, I would have Georgetown does the nothing and they're probably not going to beat UConn.
That's the thing with them. They're at 56 of the net. They got to make it in the top 50. And the only way they do that is if they have to blow the doors off of Villanova, probably blow out Georgetown.
I don't think they blow the doors off of Villanova. They probably have to be UConn.
Well, that's probably the case, or they got to go on a run in the Big East tournament. It's more unlikely for Providence, but if Villanova wins at Providence, a road game against a team in the top 60 in the net will probably take them to the top 30. And then you look at Villanova, DY, they play at Seton Hall, which would be another quad one win for them. And then they got Creighton at home, which is, I think, a coin flip type game. Now, they beat Creighton at home, who's really loved in the metrics. I think Villanova could get into the top 30. I don't think it's realistic that you're going
to
get...
If Providence loses to Villanova but beats UConn, does that make them...
Man, I don't know. They played UConn. I watched that game. Providence played UConn really well earlier this year at UConn. Yeah, they were within four or five in the last couple of minutes of that game. Now, Providence got blown out at Marquette last night, and I was surprised that Providence didn't drop more in the net because they lost by 22, but they only fell two spots after getting blown out by Marquette. I lied to you guys because I said we were going to talk Cincinnati breakdown, but I had to jump back into a little more bracketology discussion there.
I think that's more relevant now. I mean, I don't know. Like, I get it, but I don't know that, like, talking about the ins and outs of Cincinnati is all that much interesting anyway. I mean, tough game, got to win it, but I don't know that. I know they have Aziz Bandiogo or whatever, the transfer that can be maybe a tough matchup for K-State with his style, does maybe McNair becomes more valuable on the floor in that vein too. You never know. It could unfold that way. Bracketology, another bracketology insert here is, you know, Kansas State sits on the next four out, according to Lenardi, as of like 10 hours ago, I believe. Some of those teams lose, right? We find out that are on that bubble with them. So I don't know if that's been incorporated yet. Probably hasn't. So yeah, maybe they're not the 18th out. Maybe they're seventh or sixth. Just even a road win at Cincinnati could be enough to get K-State in the first four out.
Yeah, I mean, you keep winning games, other teams lose in front of you. You know, you just keep moving on up.
I will say, like, losses at this point, unless you're getting like a quad three, quad four loss, losses, because there's so much of a sample size already baked in, everyone's played 28, 29 games, unless it's like a bad loss in the quad three or quad four category, losses don't really bump you down. You're just not really improving your resume.
Yeah, and I mean, K-State's not going to have an opportunity for a quad three or quad four loss at this point. Every game that they play the rest of the season will be quad one or quad twos.
Might not have a quad two loss.
No, because they may only play exclusively quad one games, including in the Big 12 tournament. One other thing, as I get choked up talking about the NCAA tournament here. One other thing, DY, real quick. I will say this is a long shot, but you know, quad two wins matter too in the profile. And West Virginia is 144th in the net. They got to make it into the top 135 for that road win in Morgantown that K-State had to be a quad two. Now, they have a couple of home games against teams that they'll be underdogs against, but if they were to upset a team or two, they would probably get in the 135 and give K-State a quad two victory. So it's unlikely, but I mentioned that as something to keep an eye on. They're at home on Saturday, and I can't remember if it's Texas Tech or TCU, but it's a game that I think they could compete. They beat Texas and KU in Morgantown, so, and obviously came all the way back against K-State. I'm not going to go into like a ton of details, DY, on Cincinnati. I do have a breakout of them. I think the biggest key in this game is rebounding. Cincinnati's strength is rebounding the basketball. They're a large team. You mentioned Bandiogo. First of all, note, not many teams benefited more from the two-time transfer rule being changed mid-season than Cincinnati, because they got Bandiogo back. He's a two-time transfer from Utah Valley. I watched him in the NIT last year. I never watched Utah Valley play basketball, and he was great. He averaged almost 12 points and 10 rebounds per game last year. Fran Fraschilla, I remember calling a game that Utah Valley was playing in the NIT, and he was talking about Bandiogo being an NBA player. So Bandiogo is a 6'11" big for them. Actually, I think he's 7 feet tall. He's really athletic. Then they have Victor Locken, who's another 6'11" center that is a proven player. He's been there 3 years. They've got Jamel Reynolds. He's a guy that also got eligible midseason through the two-time transfer rule. He's a guy that transferred from Temple last year. He averaged over 10 points per game at Temple. He's another 6'11" big. And then Seamus Lukosius is a 6'8" small forward wing. He's their best 3-point shooter, 35% from three. He came from Butler, where he averaged nearly 12 points per game last year. And then John Newman, a 6'5" veteran guard, actually sixth year college basketball player, spent his first 3 years at Clemson, now in his third year at Cincinnati. He's 6'5" guard, averages 9 points per game, shoots 50% from the floor, also 35% from three, but only 63 point attempts on the season. So rebounding is going to be big, because this is a Cincinnati team that is number 8 nationally in offensive rebounding percentage at 38%. They are top 25 in defensive rebounding percentage as well. They out-rebounded Houston Tuesday, 42-30 on the glass. They had 15 offensive rebounds. They had an offensive rebounding percentage of 44% against the Cougars. It was the second highest O rebounding rate that Houston's allowed on the entire season. And they've had an offensive rebounding percentage of 40% or higher in 7 of their last 8 games. And I mention all of that because K-State is 294th in the country in defensive rebounding percentage at 31.6%. So, BY, I think K-State pounding the glass is going to be huge in this game, because it is a Cincinnati offense. It's 83rd in the country in KenPom. They've been held below 1 point per possession in 6 of their last 10 games. It's an offense that has certainly struggled. They don't shoot the ball well from three. They are 215th in effective field goal percentage offensively. They're 303rd nationally in free throw percentage at 68.5%. They're 237th at 3-point percentage at 32.6%. So I expect this to be a defensive-minded game, and you just got to limit second-chance points for the Bearcats.
I agree with that. And, you know, if you're going to kind of get into the weeds of what works for K-State and what doesn't as well, then you have to understand that Jerome Tang was probably correct in the last press conference before they played both BYU and, I'm blanking here, West Virginia. And so, you know, we just got to knock down some shots and get to the free throw line. Well, they won those areas against BYU and West Virginia, so I think he's pretty smart. Now, West Virginia came back and from down 25 because they closed the gap on both of those and hit the boards in the second half on the offensive end. So, to your point, rebounding also matters. Everything matters. All these games are going to be close, so everything does matter, but the recipe is pretty clear. Shooting, obviously, it's a make or miss game. It's basketball, and free throw rate are going to be pretty critical for K-State specifically, and especially the 3-point line, where Kansas State's coming alive a little bit in that department. Tyler Perry's been shooting a lot better from there and kind of getting from him in that phase what you thought you might get all year, and I think that's pretty significant, as you laid out, that Cincinnati's not the greatest 3-point shooting team anyway. Both of these next two road games that Kansas State has played are games where they could have a significant advantage at the 3-point line.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, technically, Cincinnati still shoots it better than K-State from three on the season, but I think K-State, to your point, they can get...
Drawing up maybe the last 5 or 6 games, I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, K-State has proven they can get really hot in games and shoot it well, and we all know Tyler Perry's really come on, mentioned it on the last show, but 26-70 from three in his last 8 games. You know, it's 37%. I think anybody would take that over the course of the season if you continue to shoot at a 37% clip from beyond the arc. A couple other numbers on Cincinnati. They're 250th in 3-point rate, so they clearly recognize they're not a good 3-point shooting team. 35% of their shots come from three, so they're going to pound it inside. They're going to try to go to the rim. 188th in adjusted tempo. K-State's 270th in or 207th in tempo, so very similar pace that both teams play. Possessions are going to be probably around 67, 68 possessions per game. And, like, if you go up and down their roster, their leading scorer is Dan Skellings, who's a 6'6" sophomore wing at under 12 points per game. Also second in rebounding at 6.4 boards per game. But he's under 31% from three. Day-Day Thomas, their second leading scorer, is 24% from three. He's a 6-foot junior guard. Lukosius, I mentioned earlier, career 35% 3-point shooter, shooting just under 37% from beyond the arc this year. Victor Locken is a guy that... He's been around the program for a while. I actually remember watching him at T-Mobile Center in the Hall of Fame Classic that K-State was in with Arkansas, Illinois, and Cincinnati a few years ago. He was part of that team. He's averaging 10 points per game, 6'11" junior, 6.3 rebounds on 50% shooting. He had 11 points on 5-6 shooting and 9 rebounds against Houston Tuesday. And the reason I mention that is because he's been a big part of this Cincinnati team for several years. But at the start of Big 12 play, Locken was leading Cincinnati in scoring. He'd been in a huge slump. In his previous seven games before Tuesday at Houston, he was 5 of 31 from the floor and only averaging just under 3 points per game. His minutes had been significantly cut. He was 0 of 11 from three. He may have come out of his slump the other night against Houston. In Cincinnati, they had a turnover rate of nearly 25% and an 18-point loss at TCU last Saturday, and a turnover rate of nearly 30% against Houston in the following game on Tuesday. So I think you can turn these guys over. And I mentioned earlier, they're a solid defensive team. They're 24th in KenPom defense at under 0.97 per possession.
I will say Kent State does really turn teams over a whole lot, though.
Well, that's actually one of the biggest, like, you know, West Virginia had an under 5%, what was it, 5-7% turnover rate. It was the lowest K-State forced on the season in a game.
K-State plays great. They guard. And great first shot defense, but teams get second and third shots, and teams don't often turn it over. And it is where it is. And I think probably the guy probably is the best at those takeaways is Cam Carter. But then, you know, he's been struggling in transition so much that they haven't been able to take advantage anyways.
Yeah, K-State is 211th in the country in turnover rate forced at 16.7%, which DY last year they were 43rd in the country, forcing turnovers on 21% of opponents' possessions. But a large part of that was Marquise just going in and digging and stripping the ball out, right? And they just, that's been part of the offensive struggles too, DY. It's just they don't force enough turnovers to be able to get out and run and get easy points in transition for the most part.
Mm-hmm. They guard, but takeaways, yeah, not their bread and butter.
Yeah. So, all right, well, that's a Cincinnati breakdown for you. DY, you got a prediction on the game?
I haven't thought a whole lot about it. I don't know score-wise. I've just had like a sneeze attack. So
I saw that.
Yeah, so I'm like out of it at this point. I'm sweating. I've turned into a mess all of a sudden. But I think Kansas State does win this game. And score, I haven't gone through the weeds of the numbers to really put out anything. You know, I think Kansas State can win this. Like you said, it'll probably be a little bit of a meat grinder, a rock fight type of game. I think Kansas State shoots just enough to win because, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast, I think these are two teams trending in the different directions. I think Kansas State and Cincinnati have both shot poorly as a whole, probably. And as you said, Cincinnati even has some better percentages than K-State, but I doubt that plays out that way if you look at maybe the last two games, last five games, even last 10 games. Again, two teams trending in the opposite direction. I think K-State wins. I'll try to throw out a score here. 65-62.
Yeah, Bart Torvik has Cincinnati winning 70-65 with K-State having a 30% chance to win. I'll flip that, and I'll take K-State 70-65 in this one in Cincinnati and to pick up another quad one win in K-State to end its losing streak on the road. The Wildcats have lost six in a row away from Manhattan. They could certainly use a road win. So, keep an eye on all the other action. At least K-State is right there on the bubble, and we have something to look forward to right now and watch other games and cheer against other teams. It's at least a little bit of excitement for us. All right, DY, you have safe trip to Cincinnati. And for those of you watching this, I believe this episode will probably come out, you know, sometime Thursday. We are going to have hopefully a football episode out this week as well before end of the week with a special guest. So be on the lookout for that on the KCSN feed as well. And we appreciate all of you for listening to 3Mob. And go support our friends and sponsors at Holiday Distillery and Homefield Apparel. Go to homefieldapparel.com and check them out. So appreciate you all. Thank you for listening to another episode of 3Mob.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all six of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.